webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment that you saw yourself in God and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for the 14th of July 2016, broadcasting from the home of redemptionism, where we love every train of thought visiting our little station of freedom. We're coming to you from the GR studios right here in Eva, Alabama, thanks to the generosity of Gospel Revolutionaries Jimmy and Carrie McCollum. But right now from Houston, Texas, is our great unteacher, the Heretic's Hope, the Preacher's Paradox, and the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams.
Good day, Bearis Bartlett.
Now, I know that you believe that you speak perfect Strine, but I just need to coach you a little in the good day thing.
You've done this twice already.
And it hasn't helped one iota.
It hasn't helped, so why are we going to do it again?
All right. Okay. G'day, mate. How's life treating you?
Things are going well. We're in the holding pattern between here and South Florida. And and a holding pattern between here and Calgary, Alberta. So my life and my heart kind of belongs in three places right now. Calgary, for obvious reasons, we get to go up there and have brunch.
And then we'll be flying straight back after brunch, I imagine.
That's all we go up for is brunch.
Such
we
wonderful.
We have these people fly in just to accommodate our excuse to go for brunch.
I'm so glad that I've finally got you saying this in.
I know.
Yeah, out loud.
You whipped that one for a long time. But, of course, we are looking forward to Calgary and in the summertime. It's what a wonderful time to be in Calgary. I've actually lucked out most of the times. It seems that the third week in January is a strawberry winter, blueberry summer. I don't know. You know, they come up with those things. And but I've always gotten a break. It's always been like in the 40s when I've been there. I've been going there for at least 35 years now, maybe longer. It really is magnificent.
I just want to remind our family, if you're a Facebook fan, then hit the search bar on Facebook and search for Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. If you want any of our hundreds of free products, go to www.gospelrevolution.com, where we have over 2,500 hours of free audio available, and fill your boots. You can download any of our years of podcasts, decades of teaching, or you can tune into the gospel 24/7. And any way you want to do it, you can listen to these 35 years that Mike was just talking about of teachings and progression and evolution of the Gospel Revolution. You can also listen to Gospel Revolution Radio, thanks to our executive producer, Marcel Roos, in the Netherlands. All you've got to do is go to www.gospelrevolution.com and click on the radio button. Mike, this week, Jeff Robertson, he put out this movie called All Means All, People, comma, everyone. Like, you know, we might need to be told twice, you know? And he was talking about, I loved it, this. He was talking about how the core message of Paul's letter to the Romans was that everybody was redeemed by Jesus Christ.
Well, it's true. You know, the ability to read over that and to be confused as to the reality of that very definitive statement made by Paul is... it's unbelievable. It's just unbelievable how people can read that out of the Bible, not see it when they read it. But, you know, as we have tried to do over the years, is to get people to look at what you're reading right then. Read what you're reading, read it in context, and accept what it says for what it says. It really is quite a simple task. the Christian world has been taught to do mental gymnastics with the Bible, and or twister, if you will, and you know, put your right hand on 1 John 1:9 and your left hand on Romans chapter 8, and goodness gracious, and then you're doing this with a whole congregation, and but you've got to follow the instructions as to where to put your right hand and where to put your foot and each one of your toes.
You have to think like you're told to think, really, don't you?
You have to think like you're told to think. Gosh, Barris, I remember those days so very well in being and thinking the way you ask a question and then they give you the way that you have to think. Because it can't be this and it can't be that, because that's heresy. This is, you know, of the devil, you know, the whole spiel that you get. So now that you know for sure this is the devil, you know you can't think what you just read. And somewhere along the line, that just became not quite so threatening to me. I think it started coming when I started seeing that what they were saying really didn't carry a whole lot of weight. Goodness gracious. And, of course, I had the privilege of being trained as a teacher in the Word of Faith movement. And
did you just say privilege?
The privilege, yes. I'm trying to give it a different identity, I suppose. The privilege of being trained in the Word of Faith movement. And you know, after a while, I think one of the turning points in Mike Williams Ministries was people kind of got used to me standing up in front of a congregation, and I would do kind of like Paul and rehearse the doctrine. You know, if we believe this happens and we do this, if we tithe, if that happens, if we do this, this will happen. If we have an agreeing partner in the marriage, this will happen. Your kids will all turn out just right. And everybody is like they're on board and they're, yeah, yeah. And then at the end of it, I'd say, there's just one problem. It don't work.
That's too funny. And of course, you endeared yourself to congregations all over the world as a result. And
to the congregations, I did. That was the odd thing about it. The congregations did endear themselves to me. But boy, you know, when the ministers got a hold of it, how dare you state the obvious? Because that's all I was doing, was stating the obvious. The numbers, and I know this is true for you and all of us that were there. Gosh, the people that we knew that were suffering financially, suffering physically, suffering in relationships, and practicing all of this voodoo, spiritual Word of Faith voodoo. And nothing ever changing for them. But the one thing that did change was that the overarching message was the thing that makes this work is you give your money to the ministry. So it worked perfectly for everybody that was on stage. And they never told the truth about their personal lives, their health. They always told the truth about their finances. I'm rich and I'm getting richer and you can have it too. So, yeah, goodness. So it has been it's been a true journey. We are and you know so and that's why Jeff repeated it twice. It's like we want to we know how thick this can be. We were there. We know how strong of a delusion this can be. So we got to say it twice. We got to say it 10 times. We got to say it 1,000 times. We got to keep saying it over and over again, even though we've got a million subjects to cover from the scriptures, and we have, and we will continue to. But there's not a single thing that we say in the Gospel Revolution, Barris, that doesn't need to be repeated at least twice every time we say it.
This week, the Good News newsletter went out. The summer 2016 newsletter went out. And in it, you put something that you've also put up on the web, and that is something about the testimony of God and joining the dots.
Yes. Yeah, this is something that's been of an interest to me. I think it was probably around 2012 that the article that I quoted from. And, you know, my interest is in identifying different forms of logic and how we come to the conclusions we do. I remember finding just a few years ago the post hoc ergo propter hoc. It just simply gives us definitions for identifying the way we think and the way we all think, and as to whether or not those types of logic are productive or not. Just like with post hoc ergo propter hoc, a Latin phrase meaning this happened, therefore that.
And there was a bird out on my ledge this morning, and straight after that, the eggs boiled.
Yes.
Hence, the eggs boiling was a result of the bird sitting out there.
And my gosh, how much of doctrine in religious world around the world does that take place? And you know, I watch a lot of historical type documentaries, and you know, back the further you go back in time, the more prolific post hoc ergo propter hoc has been a very dominating faulty logic in people. Just the fact that, you know, hey, there was a Jew in town last week, and this week, oh my gosh, the plague broke out. It was the Jews responsible for it. And that was not the anomaly. That was the common way of thinking. Now, what we've had to do is grow out of that, and I was really shocked at how much this flawed form of logic is still a part of our daily thinking. It is just quite amazing. If you ever, ever, ever get your mind released from post hoc ergo propter hoc, you are going to be a happy person. I just promise you, you're going to be happy. But we are so embroiled in, I hear it all the time. Once you step away from it, my goodness, you realize you're surrounded it's like being surrounded by little chickens chirping all the time. And you hear them chirping and you hear these sounds. It's like, are you really kidding me? Do people really think that way? And we do it to the positive and to the negative. We do it to the positive to try to verify that, you know, because we prayed, this happened, you know. But when you pray about everything, something is going to turn out right.
yeah, you're going to have, you know, a break even somewhere. Yeah. Hey, so you're talking about joining the dots and presuming that your particular dots are leading you to the right conclusion. You said in this article that is up on our website and in the newsletter, forced thought leads to false beliefs.
Yes. Yeah, and that's when you allow others to draw those lines for you. And I brought out in the article that, you know, with the gospel, you don't have to connect the dots. This is a pictorial for you. You know, our subject today is going to be about five major pictures drawn by Paul that spans the time from the first Adam to the last Adam. And these are complete and whole pictures. You will see there are no dots drawn. Also brought out in the article the fact of astrology. And I maybe only I think about stuff like this. Maybe I should just keep my mouth shut. because nobody else thinks about this. But I remember many years ago looking up and trying to find my place in the zodiacs of the of astrology. And as I was there trying to draw the lines that they had shown me before between the Big Dipper, I realized, boy, if somebody had not previously drawn the lines between these five stars, I would have never called that a Big Dipper. Never in a million years would I have called that a Big Dipper. I could have come up with, you know, by drawing the lines a little bit different, many different pictures. And I just started wondering, so why do I have to think this way? The whole planet in some form of those that accept it. And then there's those like me who just love playing with the idea of astrology. You know, I cannot go into a Chinese restaurant and not open my fortune cookie and read it and have everybody read it, read their own. And but I dismiss it as just entertainment. But there are some people that really live by this. So, but at some point, somebody drew all these lines together and told us that these, and then over the years, these characteristics exist here, and these characteristics exist there. And, you know, sometimes you read it, boy, it sure seems right on. But, you know, why do we have to think that way? So that's been a challenge for my life all the way through in this connecting the dots. I don't want to connect dots for anything that I do. And it's not that you might connect a dot and it actually might lead you to a positive and a real conclusion. But it's not a logical way to try to come to a conclusion about anything. Man, I'm telling you, a lot of cases have been built. Circumstantial cases. We've got people here in this country that have been in prison for 30 years because a really good prosecutor was able to connect dots. And it can be hazardous, absolutely hazardous and deadly to rely on that. But most of the time, it's just very benign. It's just like, oh, look, and oh, look, ah, okay. And mostly from that. But you get a good prosecutor who's very good at connecting dots and drawing a Big Dipper for the jury that would have never seen this Big Dipper if he hadn't drawn the dots. Oh, man, it can be really catastrophic for people's lives.
Now, you have also in this newsletter, you've included some upcoming events. July 10th to July 31st this month is our 2016 Summer Pledge Drive. And for this pledge drive, the goal is $1,000 in new monthly pledges. Now, that's quite a goal. And we're going to be doing nothing. Jeff is going to be doing all the work. But we have created three new categories for pledge members: their official sponsor, producer, and executive producer of Gospel Revolution Productions. Any new pledge of $10 to $49 a month will receive a certificate from the Gospel Revolution as an official sponsor. One-time donors of $100 or more will also receive official sponsor certificates. New pledges of $50 a month or more will receive producer certificates, and $100 per month or more will receive executive producer certificates. Now, these are real certificates. These are real credentials that can be used anywhere where these credentials are accepted and received. And we're talking about the world of broadcasting, the world of TV, the world of movies, the world of radio, and so forth. And we are in pledge drive mode.
We are indeed. And this number that we have set, $1,000 a month, is not just a number we pulled out of the air. This is the way it goes now. The one thing that I'm very pleased to tell all of our supporters especially is that every quarter we are able to clear the books. The goal is to clear the books every month. We simply do not have enough coming in on a monthly basis to clear the books at the end of every month. So after we have a pledge drive, we get to clear all the books. The credit cards are all paid. We get left without any debts after a pledge drive. And at least we've been very fortunate to be able to do that, or at least really, really, really close to it if we don't actually get to that point. But that doesn't leave us with anything to be able to really reach out and do more with. It doesn't really give us the opportunity to grow the gospel in the parts of the world that we really have the opportunity to do it. We've got so many sources out there, and we just need more resources to be able to help those things to be much more productive in reaching people for the gospel. So we're let me tell you, folks, you have brought us out of the darkness into the marvelous light financially. Oh my gosh, we just a few years ago we were covered over with debt because I did not stop sharing the gospel. It was my fault. I didn't stop sharing the gospel. I didn't stop taking on the expense of going to churches who stiffed me on these expenses. And we kept doing this as though we had the money, and it ran up credit card debt. So the thing that we're doing differently now is that I don't do that. So if the money isn't here to do what we need to do, there are technological devices and pieces that we need that if we don't put it on a credit card, we're just not going to be able to do it. So even though we shouldn't do that, we do it, knowing that when the quarter is up, we would be able to reconcile all of this and bring the books all back to a zero balance. We need to have a, I talked to Al Vitale a couple of years ago, and Al was telling me how that the ministry really needs to have a $20,000 reserve, as any business should have for emergencies. And I realized, you know, Al is very right. We do have to have that. Now, I don't know of any way that we can cut our expenses anymore. There's nobody getting wealthy off of this, except for maybe Barris Bartlett. I mean, $130 a week. I just don't know. You must be swimming in it.
I am squirreling it away in preparation for my great launch into TV evangelism.
I thought it was maybe for the end of the world or something. But so, folks, thank you. Number one, from the bottom of my heart, you have made my load much lighter. There is no one that this financial burden falls on except me. There is no one that I refuse to let that fall on anybody else. And if I overextend the ministry and the bills have got to be paid, it'll have to come out of my funds. I don't put that burden on somebody else because I'm the one that that the responsibility falls to manage the finances of the Gospel Revolution. Hazel manages the bank accounts. The bank account, that's accounts, sounds like we got money all over the place. But Hazel manages the account and the bills and all of that. And she and I coordinate constantly about which bill to pay when and which one maybe we could let go for a little while without damaging the credit of the of Mike Williams Ministries. So that to say, this is not an arbitrary number. If anything, it's probably a little bit low. I think it would take closer to $1,300 a month increase to at least let us close the books every month to where that everything is paid. So there's just an upfront analysis of the where we are financially with the ministry and the amount of $1,000 a month and in more income a monthly income for the ministry on pledges, monthly commitments from folks is really what we need. So I know I talked to Jeff just the other day, just a couple of days ago. He had been 2 days into the pledge drive. And, you know, he admitted to me on the phone. He said, Mike, he said, I try not to, but I take this personally. And when you don't answer your phone, you're breaking Jeff's heart. He does take it personally. And anybody that knows Jeff would know that he is taking this personally. But not, but personally in a way that he, you know, he knows that this is part of his job and he wants to do this well. So, answer your phone. He's got, already got all of you figured out. He knows who will and who won't and who he's got to call back. And, he, believe me, he's got your pulse and this is not going to end until you have a conversation with Jeff. So just go ahead and get the pain over. You guys are really just the best. We appreciate you. Oh, in every way. Goodness, goodness, we really do. Thank you so very much. And this month will be productive, and we will we'll get to that point to where that Al Vitale told me we needed to be, to where that we've got $20,000 for emergencies salted away, and we're paying off the debts each and every month. Plus, we're doing more outreach from the ministry.
Now, also in the newsletter, we covered the summer conference in Calgary that we talked about earlier in the show. Mike Williams, back in Calgary. Mike is speaking and delivering the latest series for the Gospel Revolution entitled The Last Trump. I will be with you and I'll be sharing. And Derek Hensel will be with us and he'll be sharing. Derek speaking on the renewing of the mind, and I'm speaking on place of perfect peace and prototypes and priorities. Conference is being held again at the Carriage House Inn, the best buffet in all of Calgary, every Sunday morning. To make reservations, please contact the Carriage House at 1-800-661-9566, 1-800-661-9566. Ask for the Grace Conferences special room rate. And for more information, you can contact Jeff Robertson on 321-220-4373 or Vic Dobrennan in Calgary at 403-686-0841. Mike, I just wanted to put a call out to those people who may be interested in helping Randy French edit his new book. His new book called I Used to Be a Christian, and he's in the middle of editing now. We've been working on this project for quite some time, and he's really he's putting a lot of time and effort into what is essentially a really it's going to be a great book. It's about and he writes very tongue in cheek half the time. Our Randy does, and he's very much in your face. This is going to be a great book. Anyone out there who thinks that they may be able to receive via email and send via email sections of a book and help us edit it, help Randy edit it, please call Jeff Robertson on 321-220-4373 and ask him to convey your willingness to Randy.
Yes. Goodness, Randy is one of those wild stories of the Gospel Revolution, which we've shared with people many times, part of a church that resoundingly kicked me out. And then 10 years later, put the video back in of the very session that caused them to kick me out and said, called me immediately after and said, I've never heard this before, but he was in the sound booth when it was recorded. It was just amazing.
He was playing chess on the computer at the time, I reckon.
Evidently. But also wanted to tell you that actually the title of Derek's message is The Renewing of the Mind. So a little play on words there. It's not just the renewing of the mind. He wanted to call it the renewing of the mind. because he's gone through what Christianity called the renewing of the mind, and now he's going through the re-renewing of his mind based on the gospel.
Can't wait to hear Derek. I'm sharing a session with him. I think you're sharing a session with him. And it's just going to be, I'm really looking forward to it. Now, to today's CPR of the gospel, to today's consistent, persistent repetition of the gospel, you wanted to touch on, I suppose we would call it, well, it's a little bit like what I'm covering in Calgary with two prototypes and quite different priorities. Tell us about this.
Well, Barris, it is one of the most important things about the understanding of the gospel is Paul's teaching, obviously. Now, we have a we have people who are coming to understand Paul's style of teaching, dialectic teaching, and it's others call it different things based on different descriptions of this type of teaching. And we have one, at least one or two teachers that are taking that dialectic form and attempting to overlay that over the scriptures and say, well, this part is man talking and this part is God talking. That number one, that don't work. You can't take a form of writing that was developed a long time after the writing that took place in the Old Testament and impose it, much less the fact that it's being imposed over areas where it says, thus saith the Lord God, you know, and then for a writer to say, well, no, that was not God's opinion, that was man's opinion.
That was man's opinion of God's opinion.
Yes, that was. Mm-hmm. Okay. And the thing that brings clarity to this is Paul's teaching in bringing these stories, these topics to life. And there's five basic topics. Now, believe me, there are more. We can reach into our little bag of Pauline letters and come up with even more than this. But there's five, and we'll go over them real quickly, and then we'll go back and try to cover them. That Paul's understanding of the gospel in his teaching starts in a garden, and he simply takes the Garden of Eden, and it ends in a garden, the Garden of Gethsemane. Paul's teaching starts in identifying the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, all the way to the tree that Jesus died on at Calgary. At Calvary, yes. You've sung that song so much now, I don't even know what's Calgary and what's Calvary. And then the temptation of Adam, there's two temptations, and Paul emphasizes this and brings into our viewfinder the temptation of Adam and then the temptation of Christ. And also goes into detail and identifies the first creation and then the new creation. So, and that's a very powerful understanding that we have. And then the fifth one is heaven and earth being created, and then a new heaven and earth, which correlates back to the number four, the creation, to the new creation. But they're separate in that man is the focal point of the new creation. And then the new heaven and the new earth. Now, here's an interesting thing, though, about this, the teaching that some are doing, trying to use Paul's teaching and the style of teaching to go back and reinterpret Scripture. And that is that they completely disqualify the Garden of Gethsemane as being even important at all, as far as it doing anything real. They also are disqualifying the tree that Jesus died on, or even the necessity of the death of Christ. The temptation of Christ, I've not really heard exactly what they have to say about that one, but the new creation, they just don't believe there is a new creation, because this has always been the way it has been, and the cross was just a friendly reminder that we got it all wrong. And then the fifth one, heaven and earth and a new heaven and a new earth. And of course, again, there is the strongest attempt to disqualify a new heaven and a new earth in the imposed thinking that there was nothing ever wrong with the first heaven and the first earth. But as Paul brings these out, aside from what people are doing with these topics now, these are very powerful pictures. They are drawn out with great detail, all the way from Genesis all the way through to the life of Christ. So from the garden to the garden is our first one.
Well, let's launch into it.
In the story, of course, we have the Garden of Eden and where all of this started. It's very interesting that the garden is a part of creation. And then the new creation also took place in a garden. So these things, I don't think, are coincidental at all. We don't have to join the dots, because this paints a perfect picture for us of these two locales. I remember years ago, I also remember that this recording got terribly messed up. I don't remember who I blamed it on at the time, but I know I blamed it on somebody. But but this recording just got terribly messed up, and this has been, oh, goodness, I just don't know how many years ago. But I did a teaching on where the crucifixion actually took place. And I gathered a lot of information on that. And, you know, people started trying to connect the dots, and I think they got it all wrong by doing that. First off, there was some tourists from America that arrived in Israel, and somewhere along their journey there, they glanced over and saw the shadow at a certain time of the day that looked like a skull in the side of a hill. And so, therefore, Bible scholars around the world seem to jump on this and say, oh, wow, that's the place of the skull. That's where Jesus was crucified. But we went through that entire thing and showed that the Garden of Gethsemane, and that Jesus was buried in the same locale. All of this took place in a very narrow location on the Mount of Olives, including the crucifixion. The one thing that Bible scholars also took out of this was the prophecy that his foot would have to touch the Mount of Olives, and that at the moment it did, that the rocks would split apart, the mountain would divide, there would be all of these external things happening. And if you take that prophecy,
clear picture of this event,
you look at, you don't find anything different happening in the prophecy of the Mount of Olives than you do at the story to where that Jesus was crucified, that the mountain split in two, and on and on and on. It's really quite a fantastic picture. I spoke with Glenn Klein, who has visited Israel many times, and told me that on more than just one or two occasions, that he had had tour guides to stand with he and the others in their group and at the eastern gate of the temple, and have them to turn back and look away and explain to them that that was the Mount of Olives, just a short distance outside the gate of the eastern gate of Jerusalem. And that the tour guide pointed out to them that there is a northern and a southern peak to the Mount of Olives. And he explained that somewhere in antiquities, they don't know when, they don't really know where, but there was a great earthquake that split this mountain in two. Now, he had no comprehension of a verse that spoke of this. And, of course, Glenn had remembered it immediately, and especially when I started doing the teaching, this was brought back to his memory also. But the perfect picture that we get out of the garden where that creation was brought forth and around, and the focal point of creation being the Garden of Eden, and the focal point of the new creation being the Mount of Olives, the Garden of Gethsemane, if you will. So this was important for, you say, well, why would that be important, Michael? Because, Jesus made the statement about the fact that he did not come to destroy the law or the prophets. Now, most people that quote that comment from Jesus, they say, because they're all so upset about Jesus, about anybody teaching that the law has been done away with, they get so upset about it that they only quote that part. Jesus said he didn't come to destroy the law, and you're saying that he did. But the fact of it is, Jesus said he didn't come to destroy the law or the prophets, but to fulfill them. So not only did he speak of a time when the law would be fulfilled, but also said that the very same time that the prophets would be fulfilled, and said so in his following statement, where he declared quite emphatically that not one jot or tittle of the law shall pass away until all is fulfilled. Now, when he was talking about fulfilled, of course, he was talking about the scriptures that he said he didn't come to destroy either. So, if there's any jot or tittle of the law that is still in place, then you have room to think that there is some scripture that might not be fulfilled. But Jesus put the culmination of these two events of the law being fulfilled and prophecy being fulfilled at absolute dead simultaneous events, that one could not be fulfilled until the other was done away with. All prophecy was given under the auspices of the law. The law produced all prophecy. And out of the law came prophecy. Therefore, if the law is done away with, prophecy cannot still be hanging out there. These are Siamese twins, Barris. You cannot, and these are Siamese twins you cannot separate at all. They come together, they go together, they leave together. there is no description of them apart from each other. So our number one topic of Paul's painting of this incredible picture of the Garden of Gethsemane, the Mount of Olives, and the garden that is spoken of in the book of Genesis. These two locations, Paul was able to paint this beautiful picture for us that we're able to see from garden to garden. It's very, very powerful.
So the first creation was birthed in a garden, Garden of Eden, or at least whether it was birthed in it, that is our
focal point of it.
Then there was the Garden of Gethsemane, another focal point, another place that was a focal point the new creation, which was about to be birthed when Jesus went to the cross. And I've often thought about that Jesus, the Bible says that for the joy that was set before him, he went through with it. Now, I don't think there was a lot of joy in getting his hands and feet hammered and his head pierced through with a crown of thorns. I just don't see a lot of joy in that. So we've got to look for what that joy was. And to me, it seems fairly clear that that joy was us. The final progression to the consummation of the evolution of God, where God was about to change. God, he had been himself all of these millennia, and now suddenly he was going to take man into himself. He was going to be bigger than he'd already ever been.
Yeah.
And so he was about to evolve. And I'm pretty sure that's the joy that Jesus had set before him. And it says, because of the joy that was set before him, he set his face as a flint to go to Jerusalem and to go through with this, essentially. But even another crucial garden is the fact that humanity was first placed in a garden. Jesus, who took humanity's place as one single entity, as one person, took on himself the whole of humanity's needs, requirements, debts, and everything. He then, after the cross, he put the garden in us.
Yeah.
So to speak. I mean, this is choice stuff, isn't it?
It really is. And I thank you for bringing that out, because this is the pivotal thought in this picture, is that we start with the external and we go to the internal. And that's what this whole process has been about. I remember reading in the Genesis, Barris, about how that God set these angels at the entrance to the garden, facing every which way they could with flaming swords and some AK-47s or something, you know. So
the sheriff's deputies.
And that no man would ever enter this garden again. Now, the thing that puzzled me was that there is no other place. There is no place that says, okay, now you know that, and this is where this whole thing goes wrong with evangelical Christianity, is that their concept of salvation is that we're getting back to the garden, that the restoration of all things is to go back to where we run around naked again. I just never will forget, as a teenage boy, thinking about how wonderful this new world is going to be when we get to all run around naked. Because, you know, at 14, you're kind of thinking about running around naked being something that'd be kind of fun. But again, this has nothing to do with going back to the garden. We've got way more than what Adam had. All Adam had was the opportunity for God to come to him and walk with him in the cool of the day. Now, the way that evangelical Christianity has it, you still have no more than that. God will show up occasionally. Man, God showed up. Man, we were in this meeting and God showed up. Man, the Holy Ghost came in. And you know, we went through one of those little stories of somebody, you know, being in a meeting and saying, "Nobody move," and then getting rebuked because they had to go pee. But that mentality of the first garden is still entrenched, because we don't look at this incredible picture. But there was no stand down given. There's no place that it says, so as I was being taught this, that we were going back to the garden, that's what salvation was we were going back to that space and place where we were before sin began. But the problem was, if we would have gone back to there, we would only been back in the same position of being corruptible. We would have still been subject to corruption. So the issue about all of this from garden to garden is, in one garden, we were corruptible. This garden being in us keeps us from being corruptible at all. It's not even a possibility. So As I looked at that, and I just couldn't get my mind around it, but wait, how do we get back in the garden where did the stand down order be given that now, okay, we're going to let you back in the garden now, whether, you know, in some pretend sense or metaphorical or whatever, that they were trying to say that this was going to happen. And I remember the teachings that it was absolutely going to physically take place, that that's what life here on earth was going to be like after the second coming. Oh, man, all these doctrines, all this connected dots, Jesus. So anyway, I just couldn't get, I couldn't get past the angels. How can this happen? I hear the teaching. I hear what you're saying. But where is it that God has given us permission to go back in the garden? It just isn't there. And that's when this understanding dawned on me about the fact that no longer we don't have to try to get back in the garden because the garden is in us. This beautiful picture of transition from external to internal is what you'll find in all of these things that we're going to be looking at. This issue of the Garden of Eden and the Garden of Gethsemane really is a wonderful photograph. It is a mammoth picture. If we only focused in on this one picture, Varys, it would be something to study for a lifetime. Just going from garden to garden, creation to creation, the place where all life comes from, to the place where all life comes from. But the real transition, even as you pointed out, was the was switching from an external garden to an internal garden. Now that leads me to think, can we cultivate this garden? I think we can. Can we do something with this garden called now possibly the kingdom of God is within? Are these synonymous in any way? Or do these relate to each other? I think they do, because the picture is there for us to be able to look at. You have this incredible garden inside of you. The only thing that this garden needs to be weeded of is, well, there's two things that this garden must be weeded of, because out of that came sin. Out of that first garden came sin. Out of that first garden came anger. Out of that first garden came law. Out of that first garden came prophecy. Now, the only way that this new garden can be productive inside of you is to be absent of sin. It is to be absent of law. It is to be absent of the anger of God. And it is to be absent of unfulfilled prophecy. In that environment, that garden inside can really thrive. That's why we push this gospel so hard, Barris, because the fact of it is that there you have this treasure in earthen vessels. You see, we don't have to go looking for something like that. It says, Paul said, you have this treasure in earthen vessels. It is all internal. And this is where we're going with this gospel is, and that's one of the reasons I'm excited about Derek's topic also. And I'm excited about mine and yours, but I'm really looking forward to hearing Derek's, the renewing of the mind, because this is one of the area that he's going to cover specifically in the need that we have to find out what it is that the mind needs to be renewed from and to. It's a very powerful subject.
This week, Michael, we had a question on Facebook. I was just looking for it. I can't find it. But essentially, the person was asking this question. To what does this verse, I think it's in Isaiah, refer when it says that they'll beat their plowshares, their swords into plowshares, and it's referring to a time in the future when war shall be no more. And the question I think this person was asking was, well, it doesn't seem that has been fulfilled after the cross. Mm-hmm. What's your thoughts on that?
You know, it's only been recently, within the last year, that I went back and looked at that. And honestly, Barris, I'd have to go back and look at it again. Let me tell you what my paradigm says about that. That when it's talking about war on this level, that the thing that man has stopped battling with is God. And that is where the war is. When you talk about the gospel of peace and the cessation of war, this is always in relationship to man's relationship with God. And this need to be in a battle with God. And that battle indeed is over. Now, I'm going to be really upfront with you and tell you that I need to go back and look at this again, but that's where I would fall on this in a moment, is that this would be talking about this relationship between God and man, because the scriptures were not about our relationships with each other. It was about a relationship between God and man.
Interesting. Family, let me remind you, if you are looking for stability, if you're looking to, you've left some stability behind, you've come out of religion, and you are now in the gospel of peace and the gospel of grace, but let me encourage you to stick with the consistent, persistent, repetitive nature of the gospel. Keep listening.
Yeah.
Keep listening. Now, this is how brainwashing is conducted. It is also how stability is achieved. So I don't want you to mistake this for brainwashing. It's not. It's just simply that the more that I listen, the more of the gospel I get into me, the more of me becomes free. It's just that simple. Well, so it is that we must leave you, family and friends. Don't forget, orthodoxy is oxymoronic. If orthodoxy was to be trusted in the least, then there'd only be one version of it. What is more likely, do you think, that real orthodoxy might be found in one of the 40,000 versions of orthodoxy or in your own heart and mind, pre-planted there before you were born? Don't forget to visit www.onemikewilliams.com and get your copy of Mike's book, One, The Gospel According to Mike. In it, Mike lays out the gospel in simple, straightforward language and weaves it with stories from his own personal experiences, some of which are going to lay you laughing, which led him to the place of ultimate ease where he now lives. Hardcover, $27, paperback, $15, and Kindle edition, $3.03, and you can read that Kindle edition on your phone if you want. You know, we run a value-for-value model here, and it costs us time, cash, and energy to research, produce, and maintain this free product. This value-for-value model is the only way we feel that we can present the gospel freely and unhindered. So, if you feel that you have received real value from this podcast, I'm asking you to seriously consider putting your hands in your pocket and donating towards it. Why don't you call area code 321-220-4373 and speak to Jeff Robertson about how you can participate. Or go to www.gospelrevolution.com and hit the donate link. And remember, cash is not the only way you can support the gospel. Anything you can do to help the gospel can make all the difference for somebody else just like you, starting their own journey towards thinking for themselves. Perhaps you would like to invite Mike to your area. It's easier than you might think. Call our office on the number we just mentioned with details when, where, and why, and we will make that happen. And so now it's goodbye from myself, Barris Bartlett, from the GR Studios right here in Eva, Alabama, a town so pure, pristine, and primitive that they had to name it after the mother of all humanity.
And it's good evening from Michael Williams here in Houston, Texas, as of yet. And we're only 1 week out from Calgary, folks. So make sure that your plans are done. Make sure your rooms are reserved. We're going to be there, and we would like for you to be too. We love you to pieces. Thank you for what you're doing to make this pledge drive a successful one.
We hope that you enjoyed today's PowerCast, but if you didn't, remember, just because you're offended doesn't mean you're right. So if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, then join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again.
Much better.